Welcome to the 53rd edition of Celluloid Tunes, the 17th international edition. Celluloid Tunes is the first and only webcast about film music in Norway, and my name is Tor Joachim Haga. On December 25th, 2017, director Harald Svart's war movie, The Twelfth Man, will premiere here in Norway. This is one of Svart's lifelong passion projects and the story of the resistance fighter Jan Baalsrud, who escaped rather spectacularly from Nazi forces in Norway during World War II. Now, for the press conference in early December, Svart had gathered several of the cast and crew here in Norway, and among them Hollywood composer Christoph Beck, who reunited with Svart on the project after having previously collaborated on the comedy Pink Panther 2 back in 2009. Now, we got the chance to chat with Beck about this project and his career, but before we get to that, I have to admit something, and that is that the sound quality of this interview leaves much to be desired. Because due to a technical issue, there is a lot of background noise and chatter in these clips. And I really apologize for that, but it's perfectly possible, I think, to make out what he says, at least most of the time. So after some back and forth, I've decided to publish this regardless, and I hope it's not too irritating. But anyways, back to Beck. Born in Canada in 1968, he graduated from USC in the 90s, where he had studied with such composers as Jerry Goldsmith and famous TV composer Mike Post. Of course, today he's mostly famous for the big titles like The Hangover Trilogy or Frozen or Edge of Tomorrow, Ant-Man, and so on. But I've been following his career since the 90s, with television shows such as FX The Series, where he went by the name Sean Christoph Beck, and obviously Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. So what did he take away from toiling in such television shows, and particularly Buffy, during this period of his life?
The palette on that show was very broad, very wide, and very ambitious. The idea The idea that the producers and directors had of that show was to make a feature film every week, basically. And my job as a composer was to treat it that way. So it was an incredible training, really, for a young composer to step in and to have to write 35 minutes of music every week and to attempt to give it the scope of a feature film. But the show itself is about, the themes are big. It's the end of the world. It's apocalypse. And for the music to take that seriously and be equally ambitious, and to have to do it so quickly, week in, week out, is just a fantastic training.
Let's play a clip from the score to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This is actually one of the more lyrical and calmer moments in a score that is often very harsh and dissonant. This is a cue called Magic Snow Music from the score album of the television series.
Thank you.
One of my favorite scores by Beck is the indie drama Phoebe in Wonderland from 2008, about a 9-year-old girl called Phoebe, played by Elle Fanning, who suffers from Tourette's syndrome, but she constructs her own sort of Alice in Wonderland-like world where she, I guess, feels more at home. Now, musically, Beck uses sort of gentle melodies and tender orchestration, Celeste and Glockenspiel and so on, to capture Phoebe's fantasy world and childlike wonder.
Well, it's all there in the title, isn't it? I mean, it's the title Phoebe in Wonderland, it evokes fairy tales immediately, and but by replacing the main character's name with our main character, we sort of make it our own. So it's really that approach with the score as well, and that's why the bells and the glockenspiel and the rest of it. But there's something broken about the character. How does a kid like that get through life with this? With this condition, the Tourette syndrome that she has, so there was support for the music without feeling, without treating it lightly, and without treating it as a joke, to feel like something was a little bit off in the music, and that was also a challenge from a production side of things. As I recall correctly, it was $0 in the budget for anything. I managed to beg a couple of musicians to come in. But I think that comes through in the, especially when you get to the parts of the score that feature those live instruments. I remember we deliberately we tried to make sure that those live components felt live, and that they weren't too perfect, and they weren't too in tune or in rhythm, and that we made sure that we left some of the imperfections in, just to give it that very human feeling, which I think is really what the film's about, what the main character's about.
This is the cue, How to Put on a Play, from Phoebe in Wonderland, as the drama class of a school attempts to put up a staging of Alice in Wonderland, with Phoebe as the title character. Now, the undulating figures on piano and strings underline the sort of playfulness of the whole situation. I seem to remember this is a montage sequence of some sort. So this remains my favorite score by Christoph Beck. Thank you. Christoph Beck is a very versatile composer, having worked in almost every imaginable style and every imaginable genre throughout his career. Now, for a while in the 2000s, he was typecast as the sort of romantic comedy guy, for example. But then he suddenly impressed many of us with his sort of lush orchestral fantasy score for the film Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief, in 2010. Surely a composer's dream.
And that goes back to, really, that goes back to Buffy, where it wasn't a real orchestra, but I was young and hungry and really wanted to learn as much as I could about that kind of scoring. I didn't have a lot of... I had a lot of classical training at the piano, but not a lot of training in orchestration, so that was a big learning experience for me. Yes, it is a great opportunity to have those kinds of resources to play with. And of course, as time goes on, it becomes rarer and rarer that studios are willing to pay for that.
This is one of the more adventurous cues from Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief, where Beck has the ability to go sort of wild with these bold brass statements and heroic fanfares, as well as some sort of more misterioso writing in the beginning here. Now, this track is called Hollywood. On the other side of the scale is sort of Beck's passion for electronic music. Now, while this has always been part of his soundscape in some way or another, he seems to have found, well, he has this newfound passion for electronics and synths, as exemplified in such scores as Charlie Countryman from 2013, or the solo album, non-film music solo album Rubberbug from 2009.
These days, in the middle to late stages of my career, I find myself being more drawn to electronic music and the type of textures that you can only make, with whether it's a hardware synthesizer or interesting piece of software for a computer. That tends to interest me a little bit more these days.
Yeah, because you also did a solo album, Rubber Bug.
Thank you for noticing.
It's about the sort of exploring electronic music. And yeah. There's another film as well called Countryman,
Countryman. Yeah, yeah. Collaborated with some Swedes.
Yeah. So that's I guess you're closer to that sound now, or
it is. You know, you complimented me earlier by describing me as a versatile composer, and you know that is something that I strive for and that I try to be. So for me, anything that's interesting musically is gonna grab my attention. But it's really in the electronic music world where. When I'm playing around with those ideas, I feel the world slips away the most, and reality just goes away, and it's just me and the music. That really speaks to me for some reason.
Let's play a clip from the score to the film Charlie Countryman, or The Necessary Death of Charlie Countryman, which is its full name. Which is a sort of a difficult love story between a traveler, played by Shia LaBeouf, and a Romanian girl. Now, for this film, Beck collaborated with someone or something called Dead Mono. And I'm not sure if that is a pseudonym or as a project name. Regardless, this is the sort of upbeat track, Bucuresti Taxi Drive. Although you could argue that several of Beck's films have been sort of straight-to-video affairs, he's had some big blockbusters in addition to all these interesting indie features that I've already mentioned. Now, one of these blockbusters is unquestionably the Hangover trilogy, the comedy film series about a group of guys trying to piece together their sort of wild bachelor parties the day after. Now, for the first film, Beck employs a relatively small rock ensemble, riffing on electric guitars, Hammond organs, and percussive hits. But as the series develops, the music gets gradually more epic until it reaches its climax in the third movie, with large orchestral forces and even a choir. So, what was the thought process behind this development?
The the first film was, not to describe it as generic, but it's kind of a standard rock band score, the likes of which I've done before. In the second movie, they go to Thailand, so that was that was nice for me because it gave me something I could hook into musically and make it a little bit different. So that is a little bit like the first score, but infused with this kind of very dark, very ethnic kind of a sound. And then what happened in the second movie is everybody went to go see it, but nobody liked it because it was basically the same as the first movie with different jokes. And everyone who was involved in the making of the second movie realized this. And they said, okay, if we're going to do a third one, let's do something different. And so that's exactly what they did. And it was a very deliberate attempt to make kind of an epic crime story. And that's where the choir comes in and the heavier use of the orchestra. And there's a great story, actually, about the lyrics that we used for the choir. We're getting ready to record the choir, and we're trying to figure out what were they going to sing, the lyrics. And in the back of my mind, I'd always had this idea that they would just do either actual Latin words or fake Latin words that sounded, you know,
fancy.
Yeah. But then we came up with the idea of having them sing actual lines spoken by the character Chow in all three movies, picking the raunchiest, dirtiest, most ridiculous lyrics possible.
Okay.
And my wife was sitting in the row in front of me right now. She was in that choir. She remembers that session very well. I think there was a little bit more laughing than singing during that session. So for every time the choir sang, we had them sing lyrics such as "Monkey jerk me off while I'm in with Lady Boy," or "I love cocaine," or "Toodaloo motherfuckers." Like all the best Chow lines were in there. For a variety of reasons, making deals with all the writers who wrote those. There were worries too down the line in the future about how versions that were supposed to be PG rated of the movie might by accident not be PG rated. There was a number of issues that really prevented us from using. We ended up going with the faux Latin lyrics, but I've got the secret recordings in my vault of all the X-rated Chow lyrics.
Let's play two brief clips from the Hangover movies. First, one of the more sort of twangy, rock-infused tracks from the first movie, and then one of the more epic choral tracks from the third movie. This is Stu and Jade from the first movie, and Stealing the Gold from the third movie.
Thank you.
In addition to the Hangover movies, Disney's Frozen is unquestionably the greatest hit that Beck has worked on. Now, of course, many primarily remember the songs, like Kristen Anderson and Lopez, Robert Lopez's song Let It Go, but Christoph Beck's orchestral score sort of cements the Nordic or Norwegian setting by using joik elements and other indigenous things where he sort of collaborated with even Norwegian composers and artists like Frode Fjellheim and Christine Hals, among others.
Sure, Christine I know very well. In fact, I tried to get her involved in this film as well, unsuccessfully, just because of the way things worked out. But she was involved early in my experiments for this film, and she was heavily involved throughout the production of Frozen, really helping me understand the different types of indigenous music from this region. And I think she wrote some lyrics, and I think she also was there when we recorded the choir to help with pronunciation, things like that. So she was kind of by my side every step of the way, and you know, I hope she does it again with Frozen 2. And Frode, is it Frode?
Frode Fjellheim, yeah.
That's a bit of a different story. His group Cantus, by sheer luck, one of the production designers for Frozen was doing a research trip here, and I think there was a CD in a store. I don't even think it was a music store, but she picked it up, fell in love with one of the pieces, and ended up in the movie. And the head of the company, John Lasseter, he fell in love with it as well. And they would have gladly just licensed it and used it, except for this middle section that was a Christmas song, a quote from a Christmas song, or had some kind of religious association. And Disney just does not do that. No. They won't do anything that's remotely religious. So they asked me, can you just change some of the melody around to make it less referential? So basically, I rewrote a small portion of it, and that's what we ended up using in the film. I brought the tune back later in the film in a pivotal moment, and this time rearranged it. It's almost like a remix with orchestra. So Frode and I never really collaborated together in that way, but we made good use of the material that they sent us.
So for Frozen, let's play two clips. First is the gorgeous choral cue Heimer Arnadalur, and then the sort of elegant winter waltz.
Thank you.
The work and research that went into the Frozen score seems like sort of an ideal platform for The Twelfth Man, even though it's sort of now less about the fairy tale aspects of Norwegian landscapes, as it is about survival among these sort of grueling natural winter forces in the north of Norway. Especially the Sami elements of The Twelfth Man score seem to sort of mirror some elements in Frozen.
Yes, and that was one thing that was eye-opening for me, because Harald and Vesh, it was really important to them that the Sami aspects of the story, musically as well, are treated with utmost respect. So this was not a consideration so much in the Frozen. It was sort of like anything Norwegian was fine. So I had to go a little bit deeper. And there's it was a last minute addition to the score. At first, we were just gonna have instrumental score without any singing. But this singer who does very young Sami singer who yoinks, and we looked into like the piece by Frode is sort of a classical version of it.
Yep.
This was a little bit more raw.
The other elements of the Twelfth Man score include harsh, sort of ostinato-driven music for the action sequences, and this sort of more ethereal electronic textures for the more spiritual or natural aspects of the story. How did he conceptualize these elements?
The ostinato-based action sequences is, I think, just has nothing to do with Norway. It's just where my own musical tastes have taken me in terms of evolution from the kind of action music I wrote for Buffy, and you know, through Percy Jackson.
Edge of Tomorrow,
it starts to get a little bit more minimalist. I love John Adams. Four dotted quarter notes followed by four quarter notes, just over and over and over again. There are only three big action cues in the film, and all three of them are based on that same rhythm. So
originally, James Horner was supposed to have done the score for this film, having previously collaborated with Harald Svart on the Karate Kid remake. But as we all know, Horner sadly passed away in a tragic airplane accident in 2015. So what was it like, quote-unquote, taking over a project like this from James Horner? Was that something that scared him at all?
No, before his tragic and untimely death, James Horner was going to be working on this film. And, oh my gosh, I can't imagine what he would have come up with. It certainly wouldn't have used all the electronics that I used.
I
didn't know until I was like almost done that he was attached to do it. I knew that Harald had worked with James on one or two movies prior. But as far as I'm concerned, he called me first, so I didn't even know that there was this whole idea. I'm kind of glad.
Yeah.
Now, the soundtrack for The Twelfth Man is not out yet, and I'm not even sure when it's going to be released, so we can't really play anything from the score. But I think an album is just around the corner, so just keep your eyes open. It will probably pop up on Spotify and similar services quite soon. The Twelfth Man, the film, should be getting international release dates throughout 2018. Although the story was sort of made into the Oscar-nominated 1957 film Nine Lives, or Ni Liv, as it's called in Norwegian, this is more than just a remake, in my opinion, because they've decided to recreate the story with greater emphasis on Jan Baalsrud's many helpers throughout his escape, and a sort of more visceral recreation of the hardships that he had to go through. Something that is mirrored in Christoph Beck's music as well. So if you get the chance, please go see the movie. Okay, so that was my interview with Christoph Beck. Again, I apologize for the noisy quality of the interview clips, but, well, sometimes these things happen. If you have any comments or feedback beyond the noise, feel free to share them in the comments field or send me a mail. The mail address you'll find on the main page. We'll return shortly with another episode. We have two things coming up relatively quickly. One is, of course, the annual top 10 list of 2017, which is an international English language episode. And the second is an overview of the Norwegian film scores of 2017. And that will be a Norwegian episode as well. Okay, but until then, I wish you all happy listening.